often lapse to encourage you, because it's an invitation for the Lord to enter into our hearts, as it was an invitation of the residents of Ayodhya to welcome Lord Ram back from his 14 years exile, welcoming him back to his holy Dhamma, his home, his associates. And we're participating in that act of gratitude every day in Kartik, offering laps, which is our invitation to the Lord to enter our hearts, a welcome for him to come home and take up residence within us. Inviting Krishna to enter our hearts necessitates letting go of the unessentials and undesirables, the anarthas, the misconceptions, the attachments, the aversions which come in between us and Krishna. As we pursue, the path to Braja is an internal journey, leading into the most confidential recesses of your hearts. Today, we're celebrating Krishna's searching his own heart for the essence of his joy, which is the source of his pleasure as well as the delight of all living entities, found in loving exchange. And for the sake of loving exchange, Krishna expands himself into so many forms, beginning with Baladev. And one of those forms is Govardhan. As Krishna was examining his own heart, seeking the essence of his joy, an effulgent, subtle seed emerged from his heart before him, descended to the ground, solidified into a pebble which expanded into a stone, into a boulder, into a mountain that just kept expanding. As the infinite pleasure playground for Krishna and his associates. So this prayer of Mahaprabhu is addressing Govardhan as the best of devotees. Because Srimati Radharani, the origin of this verse, feeling the anguish of separation from Krishna, sought the allegiance of his best servant, Haridas Varya, Sri Govardhan himself. And as she glorified Govardhan through the window of her room, from which Govardhan is not even visible from Yavat, Govardhan appeared at her window as if to respond to her prayers, but also seeking her darshan. And you can appreciate every word of the verse, beginning with, of all devotees, Govardhan is the best, and then considering his offerings. Of all devotees, Govardhan is the best. Oh, my friends, she's addressing her sakis. This hill provides Krishna and Balaram, as well as all their cowherd friends, cows and calves, with all necessities, which are also symbolic. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, Govardhan offers his respects to the Lord and being blessed by the touch of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant, and thus the ecstatic symptoms symbolized in all his offerings. You know, the water gushing forth from his waterfalls is his tears of ecstasy. The trees are his hair standing on end. The morning dew is perspiration out of ecstatic love, and on and on. As parts and parcels of Sri Krishna, endowed with consciousness, what we focus on expands. And if we focus on matters of the heart will expand as a lotus. And our consciousness is uplifted as we water the flowers instead of the weeds, letting in Krishna's grace and blessings, letting go our anarthas, attachments, aversions, and most appropriate occasion is selfish pride. The real festival is not in honor of the way, the wonderful way Krishna protected the inhabitants of Vrindavan. The protection was mainly offered to his dear servant, Lord Indra. And we should never become critical of such a servant, even though he makes mistakes, which are precious lessons to all of us, beginning with today's topic, false and selfish pride, with which Indra had been infected. You know, for generations, the Brijavasis were worshipping Indra, and Krishna had no objection until his seventh year, when he questioned the whole function. And Nanda Maharaj explained it quite systematically. And Krishna refuted all his arguments and said, this conclusion is just take all the items of worship assembled for Indra Puja and offer them to Govardhan. So, the lamps we light are symbolic of kindling the flame of bhakti. Which reveals Krishna within our heart as well as all the anarthas lurking within. And we ignite the lamp with ghee, which is the essential element in sacrifice. It's the essence of milk, emblematic of affection. And you can see the nature of ghee when you pour it onto the sacrificial fire. And Agni just expands, meaning, implying, the fire within all of us. Meant to be the fire of devotion. And that sacrifice strengthens the cosmos, the soul, gods, and men. The obstacle represented by Indra Puja is one of the counter-intentions that could compromise our sankalpa. And that is the utilitarian principle. And I'm not saying this is wrong. It's a wonderful thing if it's aligned with the highest principle. The utilitarian principle on the basis of mutual cooperation for the safety and well-being of all society and culture. It's a worthy consideration until Krishna has something higher in mind, which was worshipping Govardhan Hill, which meant the inhabitants of Vrindavan, a small cowherd village, had to face the wrath of Indra, who was in such a bad mood that he invoked prematurely some Radhika clouds are not like the storms of this world. They are the elements of universal destruction reserved for the apocalypse. And they were perplexed. They asked Indra, why'd you wake us? Why'd you bring us early? He said, very small task. It involves only one small Gopa village. And then, you know, from Krishna book, how Krishna saved the Brijavasis, and in unfolding chapters, how he saved Indra. In which he assures us that no harm can befall the servants of Krishna if for his sake, not prematurely, not irresponsibly, but ultimately are willing to abandon even our ordinary social and domestic duties, even if the consequence is the destruction of the whole world. No harm can befall the servants of Krishna. But bear in mind that just as when Krishna called the gopis from their homes, which meant they would be forsaken by family, village, society, and culture, when they came back, everybody forgot that anything had even happened. It means Krishna compensates for any deficiencies in our duties if we simply put him first and foremost. So while the violent storm of universal dissolution darkened the whole universe, in the shelter of Govardhan there was another ecstatic storm of loving emotion, which expanded leaving no need for effulgence of the sun and moon or stars, which were all eclipsed because the, you know, when Krishna lifted the hill and the crumbling rocks around the edge fell to make a dike and the Brijavasis looked under the hill, they saw an effulgent landscape with vast green fields of barley, so delightful to the cows. New barns, new homes, like a gingerbread village, which sometimes I worship at Govardhan Hill, and then it disappears right at the end of the festival as Mahaprasad. So this is, we're just transitioning from the dark moon night, which is the most luminous event in all of Karti. The dark moon night, Deepavali, Deepa means lamp, when celebrating Rama's return from Lanka. And on that dark moon night has become the most luminous festival in devotional culture because of the lamps we light. And Mother Yashoda on Deepavali got up extra early because there would be so many distractions in preparing for the festival. and she wanted to focus on churning the butter. Made from beginning with the special grass cultivated in her own private garden, this Padmagandha grass, so soft, so fragrant, so nutritious, so delicious, reserved for the prime 108 cows in Nanda Maharaja's herd of 900,000, in which there were 8 special, amongst whom 2 were exceptional as providing the best milk, of which a portion was offered back to the grass. So the cows could make the best milk for Krishna. And Braj Leela churns the milk into its essence, which is free of Aishwarya, which distances our love from its source and object, Sri Krishna. And in the darkness of the morning, Krishna would get hungry. And even in the darkness, he would steal butter because his effulgence illumined all the butter pots. And one day he saw, Kavi Karnapur tells how he saw his own reflection in the bejeweled pillar. And he stopped because he thought he was going to get caught. But the other boy stopped. And Krishna told him, "My dear brother, if you simply don't tell on me and assist me, I'll reserve lots of butter for you." And then Mother Jashoda is watching this exchange. And then when Krishna saw that he was caught by Mother Jashoda, he said, he pointed to his own reflection. He said, "Look, this greedy child was stealing butter even though I forbid him to do so. He didn't listen to me. And now I'm angry with him. And you can see that he's angry with me. But I'm not greedy. It's him. That's called projection." And another day, Mother Jashoda caught him red-handed with his hand in the butter pot. And she asked him the continual question, "Why with everything in your palace do you have to steal butter instead of not stealing butter? It's those ruby bangles you put on my wrist are burning me by their effulgence, and I stuck it in the butter just for some relief." So Mother Jashoda pulled his arm out, removed the bangle, and kissed him on the wrist. And he said, "Now it feels cool." And then, when Krishna saw the full moon, he could be very demanding, and you see this reflected in Nimai of Nadia, who would demand the moon or the stars or a bird that flew across the heavens. And if he didn't get what he wanted, he would just get more and more stubborn and angry. And until everyone learned he could only be pacified by one means, the chanting, congregationally, of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So he demanded the moon because he thought it was a big butterball. And Mother Jashoda was learning how to comply with his wishes. She said, that's not a butterball. That's a royal swan swimming across a dark lake." It didn't work. Krishna said, "Well, I want that swan." He said, "Well, no, it's not really a swan. It's really Chandra." He said, "Well, I want Chandra." And finally she admitted, "Well, actually, you're right. It is a butterball, but you don't want to eat it because you see those dark spots." Krishna looked closely, "Yes." And she said, that's poison. And Krishna Krishna said, well, I thought only snakes have poison. She said, but they got it from those spots. So Krishna said, but where did that water ball come from? And she said, from the ocean of milk. And then Krishna asked, how many cows does it take to make an ocean of milk? And she said, none. And he said, you're lying. I said, no, really. Because the same great personality who creates cows and endows them with the ability to make milk is independent and self-sufficient. He can produce an ocean of milk even without cows. And when the devas churned it, they extracted its essence. And Krishna asked, did the devas churn the ocean of milk the same way you churn this pot? And then at the end of the discussion, Krishna concluded that he only wanted Mother to show his milk. And he agreed, I'll only steal your butter. Because she was concerned about him going to all the neighbors and stealing. And they were coming to her complaining, or so it sounds, but it was really glorification of Krishna. It was the fulfillment of their desires. They churned their butter with the intention that Krishna come and steal it, because it's symbolic. When you make your hearts soft and sweet through loving exchange with devotees and hearing Krishna Gita and chanting his holy name, then Krishna will be tempted to steal your heart. So anyway, yesterday, Mother Jashoda was up early, churning the butter. Even though she had so many maidservants, she did it herself as, you know, part of her whole process, beginning with cultivating the grass to churning the butter. Everything for Krishna's pleasure. And as she's remembering his pastime, she's singing songs, because everything Krishna does becomes a song and a celebration. The wind changes its direction and its chatter flutters on the other side. That becomes a song and a festival. Sidelong glance from Srimati Radharani makes his crown fall off his head. That's a song, that's a festival. So Mother Jashoda is singing Krishna's pastimes, and Srila Prabhupada says, this is how we remember, by composing songs, as our famous Govardhan Puja, Govardhan Puja. So as she's churning, and the milk is flowing from her own breast as she's churning the butter, and then Krishna woke up hungry. And he grabbed the churning rod to make it clear, you're going to feed me as your top priority. And she did, but then the Padmagandha milk. Watching Mother Jashoda feeding Krishna concluded, my life is worthless. He'll be content forever with Mother Jashoda's milk. What is the need of this whole Padmagandha sequence, from the grass to the cows to the butter, when Mother Jashoda's milk is so superior? So he concluded, better just give up that life. That's where the saying comes from the frying pan into the fire. This wasn't a pan, it was a pot. But the milk was boiling over. Mother Jashoda went to rescue it. Krishna was mad because she stopped feeding him. So he took the pestle. That's actually Balaram's implement in Braj. It's not a plow in Braj, it's a pestle. It becomes a plow and worker. The pestle, Krishna took it, broke the pot. Then he knew he was in trouble. So he ran, but she already saw him and she's running after him. And that's a whole meditation in itself. Just take any one aspect out of the infinity, the flowers falling from her hair. Srila Prabhupada said we should meditate on these details. Because all the flowers are exalted devotees. They're fully conscious. And they're falling from her hair for various reasons. Some are thinking, if she catches Krishna with that stick, he's going to be really upset and we don't want to be implicated. So they're, what you'd say in aviation terms, they bailed out. Others are thinking, well, it's not proper that those flowers are falling behind her. We should offer a path before her. So they're falling down from her forehead. Others are thinking, we have no right to be on her head in the first place. We belong underneath her lotus feet. So they're falling right in front of her. And she's running and she captures Krishna. And then the whole drama of that. It's a festival of ropes, because however many, and there's a lot of ropes in the cowherd village, all different colors, different styles, different patterns, different designs. It was a festival of ropes, but, you know, with thousands of feet of rope, it couldn't encompass Krishna's belly. And the gopis told Mother Yashoda, just accept it as destiny. It's not going to happen. She said, no, I can't. Because I have to protect him from getting in trouble, and I have to train him. So he will submit to my knot, which ultimately he did. The 2 inches was a bridge by the combination of his grace and her determination, her efforts. So then we tie it up. He's crying. And Satyavrata Muni is marveling at this. And then as soon as Mother Yashoda leaves, he bursts into a big smile. Because he's remembering his dear servant Narada Muni and his curse upon the 2 trees, which just were there. Been there for a long time, observing Krishna's pastimes by which they fell in love with Krishna. So then Krishna, you know this story. And our June trees are very formidable. They're the last, they never fall, even through cyclones and hurricanes. But when the mortar got stuck, and Krishna was baffled, and the gopis would tell him, just pull harder. And he did. Trees come crashing down. He, as told by the little gopis that nobody believed, these effulgent demigods came out and bowed down and praised Krishna. And then they went back to heaven and not just, who can believe that? Anyway, that's another anartha. Testifying that even the gods can fall to the position of trees by the effects of offending a devotee, whereas even trees can be exalted beyond the gods by the influence of the kind-hearted servants of Krishna, in this case Narada Muni, who bless Nalikuvera and Manigriva to become those trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, to be delivered yesterday as preparing our hearts for Govardhan Puja today. So then after the whole drama, Mother Yashoda is feeling guilty. This is not like the kind of toxic guilt that causes shame in this world. It was a variety of ecstatic love. She was feeling guilty for endangering Krishna. And in her guilt, she hid. And then, without Mother Yashoda's presence, Krishna ran straight to Nanda and jumped in his lap. And Nanda Maharaj is asking, what's wrong? And he's pointing towards his mother. And she caused you this grief? I'll call for her. And Krishna said, no. I don't want to sit on her lap. I want to sit on your lap, Nanda. So Krishna is sitting on Nanda's lap until he goes to Mother Yashoda and asks her, why did you tie him up like that? Look, he's so upset, he won't even look at you. And Krishna confirmed, yes, I don't even want her. Can you imagine the grief of Mother Yashoda is actually a variety of ecstasy. And you have to judge a cause by seeing results, the effect. So at that point, who intervenes? Another mother figure, Krishna's other mother, Rohini. She tells Gopala, Mother Yashoda is heartbroken. And he can't handle that. So he runs with his arms open, crying, Mata, Mata. Mother Yashoda hears and she runs, Gopala. She embraces him. He jumps in her lap and resumes feeding him as she had done in the beginning of the Leela, and her milk was richer and sweeter due to the flood of love which surged in this Leela. So Braj Leela is, you know, in one sense, it's just a series of obstacles. Especially for the unmarried gopis, whose relationship with Krishna faces every imaginable obstacle, largely placed by relatives. And those obstacles are all opportunities to overcome by simply expanding our love. So, Govardhan Puja is so special in so many ways. One manner in which you can very practically realize and how it brings everyone together. Because, you know, Krishna spends dusk and dawn with his parents, nighttime with the gopis, daytime with the gopas. So whoever he's with means that somebody else is going to be crying in separation. And the gopas worship the moon superficially, or deceptively, to please their parents by their desire for a better mind, which is why people worship the moon. But their actual intention was that the moon not come up so early so that they would have an extended day with Gopal. Simultaneously, the gopis are worshiping the sun, ostensibly for good husbands, which pleased their parents, but their intention was that the sun come up later and go down earlier. So the night would be extended, so they'd have more time with Krishna, but that means that the gopis have less time with Krishna. So how do you resolve? By everyone having full time with Krishna for a whole week, nobody had to go home. Nobody was creating conflict with anybody else by their having association with Krishna, because it was shared by all continuously, day and night, for a whole week. So while the universe, which is being destroyed, is immersed in joy from this occasion, there's only one person who's suffering an unbearable headache, Indra. And that was very beneficial, because he kept sending his spies, go look, and see if there's any survivors in Brudge. And they all came back. No survivors. But something was nagging him inside his heart. He was feeling fearful, doubtful. Go look again. They looked again. It's a complete annihilation. There's nobody. And he was still doubtful and fearful. Just look one more time, real close, see if there's any survivors. So the spies went deeper and they saw. And they reported back to Indra. Actually, there's no casualties. They're not only surviving, they're having a festival. And then Indra knew that he was in trouble. So he went to his Guru Maharaj, Brihaspati, and confessed, I've done this. And how can I atone? And Brihaspati basically said, I don't know if there is atonement for what you did. Just consider. He used all his resources to destroy everything and everyone near and dear to Krishna, including Krishna. So he said, I don't know what to tell you. Can you imagine your guru telling you something like that? How devastated he was? But he was also wise, so he went to Brahma. And Brahma advised him, the only shelter for you is a cow. Kamadena, who fulfills all desires. So Indra descended from his mountain of pride, following literally in the footsteps of a cow. And Surabhi came before Krishna and said, you know, this person hiding behind me in guilt and shame is very remorseful. And I beg on his behalf, you forgive him. Very important principle, to be forgiven by a worthy person, who in this case was, for Indra, a cow. And he prayed to Krishna that, I'm like an owl, Indra, with his thousands of eyes, he's saying, I'm like an owl who can't even see the luster of the sun. And for a blind man, a stick is the best remedy, and therefore you have shown me such grace. And therefore my offering to you is that, though you were previously known as Abhiram, which means pleasing and beautiful, today I want to coronate you with a new name, Govinda, which means the Indra of the cows, which was Surabhi's prayer. It came later. She told Gopal after Indra left, you know, this Indra, this has caused so much trouble. Will you be my Indra? Will you be my Govinda? So for the Abhishek and coronation, Govardhan himself became the throne. Vayu personified, fanning Krishna. Varuna became expanded as the umbrella, which had a border of pearls, which was reminiscent of the waterfalls descending from Govardhan during the 1 week period. Sudarshan expanded as so many lamps. The mantras revealed their personal forms. Bhumi brought forth fragrances. The Vandevis brought forest gifts. The Devas circumambulating Surabhi and Krishna. And in that Abhishek, everyone's desires were so deeply fulfilled. And after all the Devas left, Indra lingered with Surabhi, still feeling repentant. And Krishna was so gracious and sweet with him. And humorous. part of the novelty and adventure and creativity in overcoming obstacles is the humor. So Krishna is in a humorous mood, really playful with Indra. After he made him dangle like a toy in the sky on his Airavata, and everyone was laughing at him, now he's very friendly mood asking him, is your anger now pacified? You're very dear to me, so please don't try to conceal your heart. I intervene with your sacrifice with no intention but to show you my favor, to relieve you of that mountain of pride, which was such an obstacle and burden for you. So now return to Swarga and enjoy your position. And then Indra felt relieved and pacified, and he ascended to heaven. Surabhi still lingered as Krishna anointed her with the nectar of his affection before bidding her a farewell. It was a lengthy abhishek, and Krishna wasn't really enjoying being worshipped. He was thinking, this is really Aishwarya for me. I'd rather be back with my mother. But he was obliged to reciprocate with the devas, and especially Surabhi. And after a lengthy abhishek, while the Brijavasis were feeling his separation, Krishna returned to Vrindavan, appearing more beautiful than ever before. Two eyes saw him. Who saw him as returning after only a momentary absence? Kartik is a time to absorb our hearts in Krishna, to minimize distractions. Mother Jashoda got distracted. Indra got distracted. And Krishna reciprocated in such a way as to bring everyone's focus back to his pleasure, which we symbolize lighting the lamps to illumine the nature of his holy name, which contains within it, like a seed, all of his pastimes, precepts, servants, and wonders. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so very much for your wonderful class.
Thank you.
I had a couple of comments, and I also have a request. But the essential problem here in the story is that King Indra, of course, is puffed up, but he's puffed up because he feels neglected. And this neglect is a problem that we see in society in general. Very often people that feel neglected, they commit horrific acts. They walk into a school, students who feel neglected, they kill other students. People are killing each other randomly. So this... King Indra, because he was so powerful, those people in our culture, when people are helpless, then they do these horrific things. But here, when someone who is very powerful, like King Indra, he, because of his feeling neglected, he also got angry. Like you were mentioning, why there's so many countless villages throughout Bhargavarsha, why should he feel neglected just because there's one little village that doesn't pay attention? So we can understand that the saintly person, if there's some offense, he doesn't take any offense at all. But for a prideful person, he takes offense over the very slightest little thing. And so there's many valuable lessons to learn from this pastime. But one of the really remarkable things about this pastime, you know, all of the festivals that we have throughout the year, they're usually about appearances and disappearances of exalted personalities. But here, this is a really remarkable festival because Krishna has orchestrated this festival. Krishna has specifically requested this festival, and he's designed the entire festival. And so, in closing, I have two requests. One is, maybe you can speak a little bit about how Krishna designed the festival. And I also, because I'm very fond of Hanuman, I also request if you speak a little bit, just touch briefly, about the wonderful encounter between Hanuman and Govardhan Hill.
Thank you very much, Sankirtan Prabhu, for your most appropriate emphasis that nobody need be neglected, which was, you know, Krishna's conclusion to his instructions to Nanda Maharaj. Make sure even the dogs and chandalas are fed sumptuously so no one feels neglected. As far as Hanuman's relationship with Govardhan Hill, Hanuman is actually, there's actually three personalities glorified for lifting Govardhan Hill. The first being Balasthi Muni, who flew Govardhan into Braja. Second being Hanuman, because during the Battle of Lanka, you know, the monkeys were, they were flying reconnaissance missions all over, finding, you know, suitable boulders and mountain peaks to make the bridge. Hanuman saw the most amazing, beautiful mountain he'd ever encountered. So, he tried to pick it up. And it was in Lobo, which, to Hanuman, meant this mountain is divine. And he offered his prayers. And invited Govardhan, please come with me to be part of the bridge to Lanka. Not just another boulder in the ocean, but like an ornamental piece. You know, you see oftentimes bridges have ornamental pieces midway. Something like that. So when Govardhan heard that, he flew up and landed on Hanuman's hand.
I'll pull you back later.
And Hanuman was ready to take off for Lanka when he heard the conch shells blowing, meaning that the battle was commencing.
No, no, don't pull back.
The bridge was completed, unknown to Hanuman, and the battle was about to begin. So eager for his service, Hanuman flew up and he dropped Govardhan. He came crashing down. And then it called out to Hanuman, how could you just drop me like that? And then Hanuman came back and said, who are you? I will tell about you to my Lord Ram. And then he took off. And when he told Lord Ram said, yes, Govardhan will be my playground in my next major appearance. The other important thing to consider in terms of Hanuman and his associates in the battle was Krishna considered himself a debtor because in the battle of Lanka and everything preceding it, but especially during the battle, those monkeys had to suffer terribly in many ways. And he was thinking that I never really properly reciprocated them for their sacrifice. So when Krishna broke the butter pot, he called all the monkeys from Ramlila, Hanuman, Sugriva, Nila, and they all converged. And how were they reciprocated? Being fed butter by Krishna's own lotus hands? Now you can extend this principle a little further because gopis, you know, their Venu Geet was reciprocated by Krishna explaining so many things, but concluding that I cannot reciprocate your devotion, even in the lifetime of Brahma. Therefore, let your own glorious deeds be your only compensation. But we can see from the precedent in Ramlila, Krishna's a gentleman, ultimately. He will not remain a debtor. So the debt incurred in Krishna Lila was repaid in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, in which, upon lavishing love upon everyone, reciprocated from, and other considerations as well, by himself taking the position of the gopis. To experience, for Krishna, whose love is diffused to every soul in all creation, he doesn't know. Plus, his mood is enjoyer. He doesn't know how to sacrifice for one person. That reciprocation came in Chaitanya Leela, in which Krishna liquidated his debt many times over by showering his affection indiscriminately on all. Thank you for your...
Hare Krishna, thank you very much for blessing us with your wonderful class. I just had one thing I think you may have misspoken when you said that the pestle is in Krishna, Balaram has in Vrindavan instead of a club. And I think you said flower.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. He always has a flower.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the form of this club, is the pestle in Vrindavan. Which means grinding spices, extracting the essence, releasing the flavor. Becomes a plow. I mean, becomes a club in Dwarka. But whatever it is, it's always accompanied by the plow. Anything else?
Krishna Maharaj, I was just towards the end of your lecture when you were narrating Krishna's blessing Lord Indra after your just had his pride eradicated. What he meant by when he said go back and enjoy, I was thinking maybe there's some relationship to us doing our service or duties.
I'm sorry, I missed the last point.
When he blesses Lord Indra,
he can go back to Swarmaloka and enjoy.
I was trying to understand, because obviously he's not meaning like material enjoyment, so.
Enjoy your service and don't be deluded by the pride that corrupts that enjoyment. That's what he meant. Krishna wants everybody to enjoy, and that's why he's endowed us with bhakti and loving relationships. He does not want us to vainly try to enjoy separately from him or in imitation of him, but to enjoy our participation in his enjoyment, which is natural reciprocation in devotional service. We're entitled to our service, but not to the results. We delight in our service, not the results. That's for Krishna and his pleasure. Anything else?
This is it. Special about the taste of butter, Maharaj? Why Krishna likes so much butter? Actually, I need to ask my mom, because she used to eat butter by spoons, freshly made butter, which she made, and I was thinking I need to ask her. But besides that, I don't know anyone who is eating butter like a candy. Or even kids, I don't know, maybe you know someone, I just do not get it why they're so what's so special? Why? Or maybe what's with a different butter? I don't know.
Well, it's so many different considerations. The main one being that milk is the product of love. And you can understand in graphic terms by the difference between rakshasas and civilized people. Rakshasas are nursed with blood. Rakshasa mothers don't produce milk because they don't have love, they produce blood. Milk is the product of affection. And churning the affection means condensing the essence. And even look at the color, you know. Milk is white, butter is yellow, golden hue. Milk is the product of affection. It is churned by loving relationships, which eclipses the Aishwarya, which distances us from Krishna. And that's why it's irresistible to Krishna. The product of affection, which flows. All metaphors for rasa are fluid. It's churned to enhance its sweetness.
So it's symbolic. Butter is
symbolic of the churned essence of affection, which is really all that Krishna's hungry for.
house, and in divine rapture, Uddhava's wife, now Krishna, suddenly, unexpectedly appears at the door. What do we have to offer? So she's peeling the banana, offering Krishna the banana peels and throwing away the banana, until she realizes what she's doing. And she's all frustrated. She's not only feeding Krishna the banana peels, he's eating them and relishing them. And she's thinking, what is this? And said, it's not what I eat that has taste. It's the love that went into the offering. So milk is the product of affection. When it is churned into its golden essence of loving exchange, it's the source of joy, the only source of joy for Krishna and all his parts and parcels. But nowadays, when kids are spoiled by so many artificial flavors and they can't find pure, refined butter, then everything gets all mixed up in Kali Yuga. In a normal society, there would be no enticements on par with butter. Anything else?
I would just like to say that Radhavendra and Chandra were, back in the day, regularly offering a preparation at Raj Bhog daily, which were butter balls. And they were very much sought after by the Vrijavasis. Of course, they were enhanced with a little powdered sugar, which made them irresistible to be the out of all the mahanavas. They had two kinds of butter balls that they would enjoy. One would be the plain butter ball, and one would be the plain butter ball. I mean plain, meaning just butter and powdered sugar. They did. And the other one was carob. And Ramachandra very much enjoyed those, and the Vrijavasis sought after them at the risk of their reputation. Hare Krishna.
So the regular butter balls are like the full moon, and the carob butter balls are like the dark moon. And they're both irresistible to Vrindavan Chantar.
Thank you for that.
I can just add that I'm daily requested by Ananda Kumar to give him butter from the fridge.
He wants just butter. So he asked me to cut him off a piece.
Thank him for confirming my point. Anything else? Shri Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Shri Giri Hari Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada.